Picture this, a silent room bathed in warm candlelight, a group of scholars leaning forward, eyes closed, hands on a trembling table. Suddenly, a loud knock shatters the stillness. The air turns icy. No one speaks. Could they have just conjured something or someone? This is the Philip experiment. What if I told you that you could create a ghost? Not summon one, not invite one, but create one. In 1972, a group of researchers and paranormal enthusiasts in Toronto set out to do just that. No seances, no Ouija boards. Instead, they used the power of their own minds to conjure something, someone, out of thin air. His name was Philip. At first, Philip was nothing more than an idea. A fictional character invented down to the smallest detail. His life, his loves, even his darkest secrets. But what began as an experiment in imagination took a shocking turn. The group began experiencing things they couldn't explain. Cold breezes in a sealed room, disembodied knocks, and objects that moved on their own. Was this proof of the supernatural? Or could the human mind be far more powerful than we ever imagined? Could we, through sheer belief, create something that shouldn't exist? The answer might change everything you know. Let's find out. In the early 1970s, the Toronto Society for Psychical Research, led by Dr. A.R.G. Owen, wanted to test a bold idea. Imagine a time when science and the paranormal danced together in a delicate waltz, when people still believed that perhaps the mind held secrets we hadn't unlocked. The goal wasn't just curiosity. It was to challenge the very fabric of what we thought was possible. They believed that paranormal phenomena, ghosts, hauntings, poltergeists, weren't necessarily spirits of the dead, but could instead be manifestations of the human mind. To test this theory, the group created Philip Aylesford. Every detail of his life was carefully crafted. Close your eyes and imagine him. An aristocratic Englishman from the 1600s, walking through the echoing stone halls of his estate. His face is lined with sorrow, his eyes haunted by a love he could never save. He was married to a woman he didn't love, and his heart broke the day Margot, a gypsy woman he adored, was taken from him, accused of witchcraft and condemned to the flames. Her cries never left his mind, a ghostly chorus of regret. Heartbroken and consumed by guilt, Philip took his own life. The group memorized Philip's story. They envisioned his face, his personality, his world. Every week, they gathered in the same room, a ritual of imagination. Now imagine the room, a circle of chairs surrounding a polished wooden table. The air hums faintly with anticipation. Candles flicker, their glow soft, but insistent, casting long shadows on the walls. A quiet determination fills the space as this group of educated, rational people focuses their collective energy on a man who never existed. They spoke his name, described his life, and conjured his image as vividly as a portrait painted in their minds. For weeks, they focused their energy on Philip during meetings, sitting around the table, speaking to him as if he were real. To them, he is real. An aristocrat with a tragic past, burdened by guilt, consumed by love, and ultimately destroyed by all of it. They speak to him in earnest tones, their voices brimming with conviction. "Philip, are you with us?" they ask. At first, it was nothing. Weeks passed in silence. Then, one night, it happens. A faint knock. a chill that crawls along the backs of their necks. The room goes still, breath held collectively, as if the very air is waiting for Philip to respond. The knocks grow louder. The table trembles. At first, it's subtle, almost imperceptible, but then it moves with purpose, sliding across the floor as if pushed by invisible hands. To skeptics, this might sound like a clever parlor trick. But here's the thing. This wasn't a dark seance in a dusty Victorian parlor. This was a modern experiment conducted in a well-lit room with no hidden wires, no concealed mechanisms. And what's even stranger? The group never wavered in their belief that Philip was fictional. They knew he wasn't real, yet somehow they brought him to life, or at least something that acted like life. The story of Philip bears a striking resemblance to something written decades earlier. In 1931, French explorer and spiritualist Alexandre David Neil published a book titled With Mystics and Magicians in Tibet. In it, she described her experiences studying esoteric practices among Tibetan monks. One practice in particular stands out, the creation of a tulpa. A tulpa is a being brought into existence through sheer concentration. The monks believed that intense focus, meditation, and visualization could manifest a fully formed entity capable of independent thought and action. David Neil even claimed to have created her own tulpa, a jolly monk-like figure who eventually became unruly, forcing her to unmake him through further meditative effort. If a tulpa could be brought into existence in the mountains of Tibet, could the same principle apply in Toronto, half a world away? Could Philip be a modern tulpa, born not from ancient spiritual practices, but from a group's shared belief and focused intent?
All right, but here's what I don't get. If the monks could control their tulpas through meditation, why was Philip so unpredictable? I mean, knocking on tables, sliding furniture, that's not exactly polite behavior.
That's a great question, and that's what makes the Philip experiment so fascinating. Unlike Tibetan monks, who spent years honing in their mental discipline, the Toronto group was experimenting without a spiritual framework. Their goal wasn't enlightenment. It was to test the limits of human consciousness. What's even more chilling is what Alexandra David Neil warned about in her book, the danger of a tulpa gaining autonomy. She described how her tulpa began acting independently, developing a will of its own. Could the same have happened with Philip? Was he more than just an experiment? The more the group interacted with Philip, the stronger his presence became. And yet, there was always a strange emptiness to it all. Philip never spoke, never gave them anything beyond what they already believed about him. He never contradicted his fictional story. It was as if the group's own thoughts and expectations were reflected back at them, amplified through the phenomenon they've created. So here's the question. Was Philip an echo of their collective imagination? A psychological trick? Or did they stumble onto something far more profound? Proof that the human mind can reach beyond the limits of reality itself. And if Philip was real, even for a moment, what does that mean for the stories we tell ourselves every day? Are we shaping the world around us more than we realize? So, what's really going on here? Did the group really summon Philip, or was something else at play? Let's break this down a bit. One of the most compelling explanations ties the Philip experiment to an ancient concept, the tulpa, as I previously mentioned. In the high, snow-covered mountains of Tibet, monks have practiced this mysterious art for centuries. The tulpa is no ghost, no trick of the senses. It is being crafted entirely through thought. The process requires intense focus, visualization, and an unwavering belief. Over time, the tulpa becomes so vivid in the mind of its creator that it manifests in the physical world, an independent, sentient entity. But if tulpas are real, they're not just limited to Tibetan monasteries or 1970s experiments. Over the years, there have been eerie reports that suggest tulpas might be more common than we think. Take, for instance, the case of the imaginary friends study. Psychologists observing young children found that some took their imaginary companions to extraordinary levels of detail. These children would claim to hear whispers, notice small objects moving, or even feel a presence in the room. In certain cases, parents corroborated these claims, noting physical changes, furniture shifted, toys relocated, as if the imaginary friends had become tangible. And then there's the infamous case of Jeff, the talking mongoose. In the 1930s, a family on the Isle of Man claimed to be haunted by a strange, mischievous entity. Jeff, described as a talking mongoose, would appear sporadically, moving objects, making noises, and even holding conversations. Some paranormal investigators dismissed Jeff as a hoax, but others believed he was a manifestation of collective belief and fear, a tulpa inadvertently created by the family. Now take these alongside the chilling case of the Slender Man. What started as a harmless online contest in 2009 spiraled into something far more sinister. People shared eerie stories, doctored images, and even video sightings of this impossible tall, faceless figure. And then came the real-life horror. Two 12-year-old girls in Wisconsin lured their friend into the woods, stabbing her in what they claimed was an offering to Slender Man. Was this proof that belief, magnified by the internet, could create something with real-world consequences? And then, there's the case of paranormal investigator John Keel's ultra-terrestrials, beings that seem to materialize through belief and expectation. Keel theorized that what we perceive as ghosts, cryptids, or even UFOs might not come from external realms, but are manifestations of our own minds, shaped by culture, fear, and imagination.
Okay, but here's the kicker. If belief can create something as harmless as a monk or as terrifying as Slender Man, where's the line? How do you control what you create?
Well, that's the danger David Neal warned about in her book. A tulpa might start as a benign creation, but once it gains independence, it can act unpredictably. If the Philip experiment did, in fact, create a tulpa, the group may have unknowingly invited a force they didn't fully understand. But there's another possibility, one that's just as fascinating. Some skeptics suggest that the phenomena attributed to Philip could be explained by psychokinesis, the ability to move objects or influence the physical world with the mind. It's a theory that ties into the subconscious mind, where belief, stress, and emotion can manifest in surprising ways. What if the group's intense focus and expectation triggered psychokinetic activity without their knowledge? The knocks, the table movements, could they have been caused by the group itself, not Philip? But here's the twist. The group always knew that Philip wasn't real. He was their creation, a fictional character born from their imagination. And yet, they interacted with something that felt very real. And if belief alone can blur the lines between fiction and reality, what else might we be capable of creating? Philip experiment is fascinating, no doubt. It's the kind of story that makes you question the boundaries of reality, the power of the mind, and even the nature of existence. But were the findings shared in this experiment real? No, they were not. When you start peeling back the layers, the cracks in the story become impossible to ignore. Let's start with the claims. The group reported hearing knocks in response to their questions and seeing the table move, sometimes violently. They described feeling cold drafts and even a presence in the room. But is there really any solid evidence that these phenomena were anything more than a performance? First, let's talk about the setup. The group conducted these experiments in a room that was well lit and free from any obvious tricks. Sounds impressive, right? But here's the thing. A well-lit room doesn't mean a controlled environment. There were no third-party oversight, no controlled conditions, and no measures to prevent unconscious influence. Without these safeguards, how can we separate genuine phenomena from group psychology or outright trickery. Now, let's focus on the table movements. This is classic seance-style theatrics. Studies in group psychology and the idea motor effect, an unconscious physical response, show that people can inadvertently move objects like a table without realizing they're doing it. In fact, experiments as far back as the 19th century debunked seance tricks by revealing how subtle movements from participants could create the illusion of paranormal activity. And the knocking? Easily replicated. A shift in weight here, a subtle movement of the legs there, and you've got all the ingredients for a ghostly tap.
Okay, but what about the cold drafts? If the room was sealed, where's that chill coming from?
Well, good question, Wendell. Cold drafts are notoriously subjective. A slight opening in a door, a shift in airflow from an HVAC system, or even the natural cooling of the room during a long session could create that sensation. And let's not forget the power of suggestion. If one person claims to feel a chill, it's almost guaranteed others will start to notice it too, whether it's real or not. But here's the most damning piece of evidence against the Philip experiment. The group knew Philip wasn't real. From the start, they admitted he was a fabrication, a thought experiment turned into a seance. And if you're sitting around the table, convinced you've summoned a ghost, how much of what you see and hear is influenced by your expectations? This is where the phenomenon of confirmation bias comes into play, seeing what you want to see and dismissing anything that doesn't fit. It's the same trick at work during a Ouija board session. Tiny unconscious movements create the illusion of external force. And the more you believe, the more convincing it becomes. Even today, experiments show that when people are told to expect paranormal activity, their brains fill in the blanks. They hear sounds that aren't there, feel sensations that aren't real, and even report seeing things that don't exist. Now look, I'm not saying tulpas aren't real. Tibetan monks spend years in meditation, honing their mental discipline to levels most of us can't even imagine. If anyone could create a being through sheer willpower, it's them. But the Philip experiment? These weren't Tibetan monks. This is a different story. This wasn't an ancient spiritual practice. It was a group of well-meaning but untrained individuals sitting around a table essentially playing pretend. And that brings us to the final question. If the group created Philip through belief, why didn't he ever do anything they didn't expect? He never gave them new information, never deviated from the script. Everything he did aligned perfectly with their expectations.
So, what you're saying is, if Philip wasn't real, then this wasn't just an experiment. It was a group of people convincing themselves of something they wanted to believe.
Exactly. And when you strip away the mystery, what you're left with isn't proof of the paranormal. It's a lesson in how powerful our minds can be. But not to summon ghosts, but to trick us into seeing what isn't there. So, was the Philip experiment a groundbreaking exploration of the mind's power? Or just a clever parlor trick dressed up as science? You decide. But one thing's for sure. Belief is a powerful thing. And sometimes, it's the only ghost in the room. Thank you so much for hanging out with me today. My name is Ralph, that's Wendell, and this has been Divergent History. If you had fun today or learned anything new, do us a favor and subscribe, share, like, hit all the buttons. I know this sounds like a broken record, but that stuff really does help the small channels like mine that are trying to make their mark amongst the giant channels out there. Also, like many topics we cover on this channel, today's topic was recommended by you. So, if there's a story you'd like to see or learn more about, please comment below and you may very well see a video created on it. Until next time, thank you for exploring with me. Your curiosity means the world and you are truly appreciated. Have a great night.